Hello, folks, and welcome to the Metallica Report. I'm Stefan Shirazi, editor of the band So What magazine.
And I'm Renee Richardson, director of philanthropy for Metallica's foundation, All Within My Hands. This is your official weekly Metallica podcast, the only inside source, bringing you all the news from the band's HQ and studios deep in the heart of Northern California. And Steph is back just in time to talk riffs.
Excellent. Good, good, good. I like it.
Yeah, this was inspired by your sit down with Brian Tatler, which was so cool. The Spotify question that we asked last week is, what is your favorite Metallica riff? I'm only going to read a few responses. The Senators says Whiplash. Russell says the opening to Master of Puppets. And actually, Master of Puppets came up a lot, which is not really much of a surprise. And Angel pretty much has us all covered, because Angel says their favorite riffs are from Master of Puppets, Creeping Death, For Whom the Bell Tolls, Blackened. Dire's Eve. And then I did want to read this from Angel. How can we pick one? I love these guys. And I'm going to close with Craig Angelo Reyes, who says his favorite Metallica riff is the whole intro to No Remorse, adding, man, these questions are getting harder and harder, you guys.
I get it. I get what you're saying, Craig. It is tough to pick your favorite Metallica riff because there are so many.
Mm-hmm.
I am very, very partial, as I've said on this show before, I think several times, to Fight Fire with Fire. That always gets me remembering when I had long hair and dandruff.
Yeah.
A good thing. But I love a bit of Blackened as well. I love Blackened. So, I hear my voice is going, Blackened is good.
I know. We've got to hear a little of it.
Let's hear it.
Play it.
Yeah.
That was good. You know, and it's also mood-based, right?
What's great is about a riff like Blackened, it's going to switch your mood to that mood.
Yeah, that's
true.
The
moment you put it on. So if you're feeling a little sort of, you know, I don't know, slow in the day and you want to get going, you just put it on.
Like we just did.
Yeah. And then you, do you drop into a crouch when you do that? Do you drop into the Hetfield crouch?
No, I don't. I don't do any of that stuff.
I sometimes do. I sometimes do when I'm doing dishes in the kitchen late at night. Sometimes. Yeah, I love it. The spatula becomes a guitar.
We got to focus.
Let's move. Okay.
So coming up on this episode, it's Q&A day. The Metallica team put the call out to our fifth members to submit questions to the band. See that? Membership has its privileges. We received a lot of great questions from the local fan club chapters. We sat down with Kirk and Rob to get your questions answered by the guys themselves. But before we get into it, there was, believe it or not, a question for me and Steph from a nameless Spotifyer. I really like this question, by the way. Could you go more in depth and talk about the first genuine impact a Metallica recording had on you? What did it do for you on a personal level? And how does that feeling reside in conjunction with working for the group all these years later?
Okay. Well, first of all, nameless Spotifyer, if you could, like, please let us know who you are and we'll call your name out. Yeah. Because it is a great question. You're right, yeah. Renee. You know, in my case, of course, it can't be straightforward because the first recording I ever heard was the No Life to Leather demo, which came through the back streets of Surbiton, Surrey, via metalhead extraordinaire Noel Jones. Rest in peace, Noel. You know, we all dug that a lot. But in terms of the first official recording to, you know, supremely impact my life, and it really did impact my life, I'll give you the story and then I'll tell you what it was. I had gone to see Motorhead in Dublin at a festival. Lemmy had given me a big hug. This big hug had infused me with so much joy that I had got absolutely hammered. So I subsequently, on my ferry ride back to England, I really don't remember much about it. I do remember coming to and making my way, you know, through the train and stumbling up the stairs to my parents' house and everything. And I saw this brown envelope, like a record-shaped envelope, leaning against the door. I was an intern at Sounds Music Paper at the time. I'd just started. This was the first free album I ever received. And when I took it out, it was Kill 'Em All.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, this is amazing. And I ignored my father's wishes to change the stylus on the stereo. I don't know if any of you out there have ever had that experience growing up where your dad said, well, you know, if you're going to use my stereo, you've got to, you know, you've got to have a different stylus. Or maybe my dad was completely crackers. I don't know. Anyway, I used his very precious stylus, you know, to transmit this oral gold. And it was unbelievable. It was like being electrocuted. It was in the best possible way. I mean, I don't want to be, I realized I was listening to life-changing music. The sub-question about how, you know, how it feels in relation to working with the band now, in all honesty, it was really at the very beginning of a working relationship that began a year later with the band. So I see it as part of a continuum.
That is such a good story. I mean, and an incredible memory. And plus, I'm just thinking of you like being on this high from the hug from Lemmy. That's a cool, cool story. So for me, I'll get to the actual recording in a second, because for me, it came really from the live show. Yeah. I think I've mentioned this story before, but it was 1989 and my cousin Michelle was really into Metallica. I knew nothing about the band and she asked me to come with her to Brendan Byrne Arena and I was going to see The Cult. I was like, oh, The Cult, great. I'll see The Cult and this will be awesome. And so fittingly, because I had no interest in the main band, I went to the bathroom when the band started and I was in the woman's room when I heard this music, and it was the loudest, fastest, but cleanest and tightest music that I had heard. And I mean, this is an arena. I come running out of the bathroom, which was who the hell knows where, up on, you know, way up high. And I just had to see what this was, what this music was. I had never heard them before. It changed my love of hard rock forever. It brought me into the hard rock scene. But again, a little later to the game, because the first full Metallica album that blew me away was the Black Album, front to back. I mean, again, you have to remember at that point, I'm getting into radio. So everything's super commercialized. Like the stations I was working for was not playing any of this heavy stuff. So when I listened to that full album, I was like, this is probably one of the best albums I've ever heard.
The Metallica Report is sponsored by BetterHelp. Christian Swain here, aka the Rock and Roll Archaeologist. I hope you're doing well. I know some days are better than others, but if today is not as good as you'd hope for, then it might be worth looking at some online therapy. And we have a special offer for you. As some of you know, I was in a pretty bad situation after a mass shooting took place while I was performing with my band in 2019. Afterwards, I needed to seek some therapy, and it really helped. I was better for the time I spent talking through those feelings I was having about the memories of the event. Since then, I have engaged in more talk therapy when I need it, and now I'm using BetterHelp. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. What I personally like about BetterHelp is that it is entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapist anytime at no additional charge. Visit BetterHelp.com/Metallica today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Metallica.
Okay. So when Renee and I had Kirk and Robin recently, we knew it'd be wise to sit them down and get them to answer a few of your questions. So settle in and hear them getting to grips with a few of your finest inquisitions. Check it out.
Here's one from Don Hammond. He is the chapter head from Master of Puppets, one of the fan club chapters. What rarely played live or deep cut Metallica song consistently comes up in talks for set lists, but then gets cut out?
It's a good question. There is something that did come up recently and kind of drawing a blank on it. It's a delicate balance because with Metallica, you know, we it's called trial and error, where we try a certain set, like with the 72 Seasons tour, we introed with the instrumentals the first couple shows, which is great for us in theory. You know, it's like, wow, wouldn't that be so cool? But then you find, well, the fans want to come out, you know, just pump, and the instrumentals would live better within the middle of the set, kind of give them a break and also take it in a sort of dynamic kind of way, a more dynamic range to that. But that's a tough one. I feel like Until It Sleeps is a song that we were actively playing in the States, but then I feel like in Europe, or maybe it's vice versa, we started playing it a little less. Again, I don't know if I'm forgetting if it was in Europe or if it was, because certain songs, believe it or not, resonate a little better in different territories, like the Mission Impossible jam. We try to every once in a while bring that song into the mix, and we tried to bring that song into the mix in Europe, and it's a great song, but maybe it didn't resonate on their radar quite the same as it resonates on our radars.
Dana, it should not be Eye of the Beholder, and I kind of want to say Leper Messiah. That's one that we kind of play it, but you know, some people might not be into the mood to play it, and then some time goes by and all of a sudden people want to play it again, you know. I always consistently want to play it because I just love it. It's more the case with Thing That Should Not Be, because it's a deep cut, and sometimes we'll feel the need to like play maybe a newer album track than a deep cut. And so that's kind of what happens.
This was kind of an oddball question from Frederick Beaver. He wants to know, he's always wondered, since your hands are your work tools, he wants to know if you're prohibited from doing do-it-yourself projects or using saws, for example, like, are your hands insured for such things?
I like the end of this question, though. You missed the best bit. It's where he says, forgive me if this question seems stupid to you. I think it's actually quite sensible.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, one false move and you ain't playing bass anymore if you're trying to...
Yeah, but you surf. I mean, one false move, you're surfing.
Surfing, I used to snowboard all the time.
Snowboarding.
And snowboarding would have been more dangerous than, say, surfing, because you're falling on water. And
yeah.
You know, that's obviously a lot less risk of injury versus falling on hard pack ice.
Unless there's a rock or a shark underneath you.
Yeah. Exactly.
So was that a conscious decision because of your hands to not snowboard anymore?
I kind of stopped snowboarding when I joined the band. And that's just because I didn't want to risk injury. Yeah. But I still wanted to stay connected to surfing because it was less risk and it's super fun and it's great for you in so many ways, very therapeutic. As far as insuring my hands, I just try to be careful and respect these because, you know,
yes.
Yeah, it's as you get a little older, you start to realize that you can't, you know, you got to take care of your hands. It's like my son used to skate. He was a very active skater and had a coach. And
he was.
At a certain point, he had to make the decision. Ty had to make the decision to skate less. And it's very real because skateboarding, how many times do you hear about someone breaking the arm or their wrist?
Yes, it happened. It happened in this band a couple of times.
Exactly.
That's right. You could definitely use it as an excuse when Chloe gives you the honey-do list of fixing things around the house. You're like,
I can't. Interesting thing is I actually did construction work before I joined Suicidal Tendencies, and I did everything from drywall to hardwood floors. I remember I was working for this person. He was like the dean at Musicians Institute, and he lived in Venice. I would go there and I was kind of like his handyman. And here I was, this bass player. He was a guitar player, but he now is on the more, you know, administrative side of things in the music industry. And he would watch me like with a chainsaw, like cutting his trees and all this stuff. And then he'd be like, why do you do this? He'd literally say, you know, he'd go, you know, you need to find yourself a rich girlfriend who can take care of you so you can do your music, because you don't need to be cutting trees down with chainsaws. And then he'd go, oh, and by the way, can you get that lemon tree over there? And, you know, I'll never forget that.
Frederick has asked an amazing question here. That's a great question. Now, so Frederick, there's been no way a stupid question. We're all in, and I don't have to ask. Do you have a tool belt?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you did. Was it full at all times? Did you have a range of like hammers and screwdrivers?
That's what I did. Yeah, that's what I did from sort of
18, DIY guy, huh?
To 25. Mm, yeah,
18, I love that.
25. I was that guy.
That's amazing,
Kirk. Your hands insured? Are you not allowed to do DIY?
What's DIY?
Do it yourself, you know, cabinet, like go to IKEA, get a cabinet, put a toilet in.
I do whatever the fuck I want to do. I do whatever the fuck I want to do, and I don't even know if my hands are insured. So there you go.
You've never formally taken out an insurance policy on them.
It never struck me. I mean, you know, you hear about fucking things like this all the time, but I mean, is it real? I mean, you know, it just seems like, again, it's like one of those instances where a person might be taking themselves a bit too seriously.
All right, should I do one more question from the fans?
One more, and then I think we should let Rob out because he's got to get back to practicing, I'm sure.
Yes. So Carla Farugia, she's the chapter head for Mexitalica. Are we having 4 non-repeat shows in Mexico City?
What a great question.
Yeah.
Are all 4 going to be non-repeating?
Oh, that's a good question. Because I just realized that we haven't played
two back to back. Right.
That's right.
Holy cow, man. That's a Lars question.
Oh, it is. Yeah,
no, because seriously, she's right. I mean, we've been doing 2 shows. That would be, so now you're getting into 4.
4.
And in Mexico City, which we all know this band's history, the Mexico City, it's special. It's so special.
One of the craziest crowds, if not the craziest, but South America's right up there.
Renee, I'm sure you'll see it. I mean, you there's nothing like these guys in Mexico
City. Yeah. No, I can't wait.
Yeah. It's going to be intense. But I guess we're going to have to answer that closer to gig time because right. That does bring up a great point. At the same time, people get upset, man. They get pissed off when you don't play Master of Puppets or Sandman. Right. Or so that'll be something that we got to talk about.
TBD on that one.
Yeah.
I'm afraid to answer that. No, we end with another great question. These questions have been great. You're wrangling some great questions from our Spotifyers here, Renee. Good stuff. It's fun. And
their brain. I just, you know, the words.
No. It's a couple of great questions again to round us out. Rob, as ever, thank you very much for accommodating us as freely as you always do. As a great friend to this pod, always shows up. Even when he's getting changed after a gig. Much appreciated. Really good luck in Australia with everything that's going on there with the Infectious Grooves. And I know I speak for everyone when we say we're super looking forward to seeing you in Munich.
Absolutely. Can't wait to get there. And I can't wait to get back with the boys and get back to it. It's going to be fun.
All right. So Seb, who is chapter head of Riff Life, and this is the final question we have for now is, he says, my question for you is, how much do you like to hear your fans playing your own music? So, you know, when you see things on YouTube and so on and so forth, may it be note for note or adapted in their own way? He said, knowing this would be a real pleasure for all of his members. So thanks a lot in advance.
I love it when people interpret the music through their own filter. And, you know, I think that's the proper way other people should play other people's music. But I also understand that people like to recreate it note for note to get to get that same experience of playing those exact notes. So, you know, I support both approaches fully. But, you know, the one I prefer to hear is our music being put through someone else's filter. So it comes out different and more individual, more personalized. And for me, I think, you know, it leads to much more interesting results than, I don't know, just trying to just like play it note for note.
And how great is the contrast between some of Rob and Kirk's answers, right? I mean, those guys are yin and yang. Rob will be measured and thoughtful, and Kirk just dives right in with his responses. And you know, I got to thinking about that time they told us about surfing.
Yeah.
And how Kirk will just jump into any wave, just barrel right into it. And Rob is a little bit like, nah, do I want to choose that one? I don't know. He'll weigh the pros and cons a little bit more. Anyway, it was interesting to make the comparison.
Yeah, it's hilarious and true. Albeit I will say I did once witness Mr. Trujillo surf in a swimming pool with a four-length board. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So he can get instinctual and a little nutty too, it has to be said. But yeah, those two, you know, they're quite a pair. It was cool that you out there had such a hand in helping us with this week's episode. We love that.
Totally. Yeah, we do. And please keep them coming because we're going to do this again as the 72 seasons will unfold. Visit Metallica.com/podcast. You can submit your questions. You could do it as a voice record and we'll use it on the podcast. And also don't forget about the contest we have going on, the monthly exclusive Metallica merch package giveaway. If you haven't entered yet, you got to do it. And all you have to do, it's very easy, follow and share this podcast to be entered. Head to pantheonpodcast.com/Metallica to enter.
One thing we want to point out as we near the end of this week's episode, and Spotifyers, you will have noticed that every week the Metallica Report now comes with its own specially curated playlist that both reflects the episode's direct musical references and its overall flavor.
It's so good. I love the playlists and it's important that you love them too. You should check them out. Follow us and do what you need to do to capture each week because here's the thing. These playlists are not going to live indefinitely. We're going to be refreshing every few weeks. So make sure you don't miss out on this very cool supplemental curated thing that we're doing. Follow us, tell your friends, check it out and be sure to let us know what you think.
Absolutely. And sadly, we're out of time.
No.
I'm afraid so. But next week, it's a deep dive chat with someone close to the heart of Metallica matters for decades. Leave them guessing, eh?
Mm-hmm.
So until then, see ya.
The Metallica Report is produced by Metallica HQ, Pantheon Media, and PopCult.
If you like what we're doing here, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
Be sure to visit Metallica.com/podcast to submit your questions, offer your thoughts, and become a part of this podcast.
Copyright 2023, all rights reserved.